Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, May 24th, 2026. My name is Leah M., recovered your moderator for today. The share ID numbers for Friday, May 22nd, are the following. For the 7 a.m., 23,483, that's 23483. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,484, that's 23484. This morning, A Vision for You presents Step 3, What If God Is Everything? Step 3 states, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Powerless. In step one, we find complete despair, frustration, and bewilderment. The mental obsession condemns us to pick up that first bite when we don't want to, and the phenomenon of craving condemns us to continue eating once we start. We have no choice. Our efforts, our energy, and our desire have not delivered the hoped-for results. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed us utterly. In step two, we're given the solution. Our situation is actually not hopeless. Far from it. There is hope, but that hope lies outside of ourselves. Lack of power is our dilemma. We have to find a power greater than ourselves. Lack of power. We have to find a power other than ourselves. The Big Book turns up the heat on page 53. By reminding us about our step one experience, crushed by a self-imposed crisis that we have no power and we are going to live miserably. So we had to fearlessly face the proposition that God either is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? We are left with no wiggle room. We are posed with the Big Book's ultimatum. What if God is everything? Joining us today to speak on step three is Crystal R., recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. Crystal is dedicated to our 12-step way of life, and she's here to share her experience, strength, and hope with us today. And it's with great appreciation and always a delight to welcome Crystal to the line. Good morning, Crystal.
Morning, Leah. Good morning, everyone. Hi, I'm Crystal R., recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. I'm not well today, so I'm really going to try not to cough in your ear, so hopefully that will happen. When I joined program, I was about 31. I was over 250 pounds. I'm not even 5 feet tall, really. It's a lot of weight on a really short person. And I was in the ER more times than anyone who's 30 should be anywhere near an ER. Doctors told me that I would not make it past my 30s. But more importantly, I was a complete slave to food. I had even stopped making promises. I had stopped diets. I had just made a decision. I was going to eat and I was going to die eating, and I didn't care. Until I came to OA, and I learned about the allergy of the body and the twist of the mind, and I worked the 12 steps with everything I had in me, and now I've been in recovery for over 8 years. I'm at a normal body weight, and really, that's just like the smallest change. Like my parents don't recognize me sometimes, but from how different I look, but the external is the smallest part that's changed in me, because there has been a complete rearranging of thoughts and feelings and attitudes and beliefs inside me, and I'm a completely unrecognizable person from who I was 8 years ago. And a big part of that was step three. The first time, you know, I took step three, my life was really small. It revolved around my little couch and my Netflix and the crunchy bag that my hand was in that I was eating out of, you know. And today in recovery, my life has grown so much bigger. There's like, there's so much happening and it's scary and it's, there's so many people in it. And every day I get to make that same step three choice. It was not something I did one time when I worked the steps and then it continued forever. I make it every single day. I'm making it today. And the last 3 years for me, I felt have been like a, like they were like a boot camp, like step three boot camp. So I'm going to share with you my experience from the last 3 years. In 2023, I got married to a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful man. And about 3 years into our marriage, I started having like terrible fatigue. Like just, I'm in my 30s and I would wake up and my arms and legs would be like lead. I literally could not, I didn't have the energy to get out of my bed. I would do simple things like just put dishes away or put them in the dishwasher. And I'd actually end up, like I'd have to take a nap because I was so exhausted from just pushing dishes away. I would just, there were days when I just couldn't even get off the couch. There were Christmases, Easters, weddings, baby showers, birthdays. Like I would want to go and then I just have to cancel because we would have and I couldn't even move. And this is horrible for me. Like I'm like an energizer bunny. Like I'm always doing like 50,000 things at the same time. So for me to be confined to a couch and unable to move was extremely frustrating. I went to doctors. I got sent to lung specialists, heart specialists, blood specialists. Like every test they had, they did, and they could not figure out. Like literally doctors were just like, we just don't know what's causing your fatigue. There's nothing indicated in any of your tests. So they figured, okay, maybe it's psychological, maybe it's anxiety. And I tried three different types of anxiety medications and none of them helped. In fact, for whatever reason for me, they turned me into a zombie. Like I couldn't even function at all. And that's when I started having nightmares every single night. And that hasn't changed. Like for the last 2 years, every single night I have nightmares and it hasn't gone away. And then about 6 months into my marriage, my husband started to have back pain and he was really struggling and it got worse and worse until he started to just live with pain every single day. And it was just so horrible for him. And we discovered that he had degenerative disc disorder and he had to do really expensive treatment because we tried all the other simple things and they weren't working. And he had to go through expensive treatment and he still lives with pain every day. He also discovered that my husband's a teacher. His whole family's teachers, like they have a teaching legacy, and that's all he's ever done. And he realized that he didn't want to be a teacher anymore. First, just the physical toll on him, but also he just realized that that was just not the profession for him. And he, in fact, decided that he wanted to be a voice actor. After a lot of, you know, career searching and soul searching, he determined that he wanted to be a voice actor. And that is not what I signed up for. Like I married a teacher with a paycheck and pensions and a pension and benefits. And I did not realize how much I liked those things until they were gone. And I don't even know what a voice actor is. He could have told me he wants to be Brad Pitt. Like I was just like, I'm sorry, what? Like what? How, and how do you get a paycheck from that? Like how are we going to pay the mortgage? I was terrified. And at the same time that this was happening, I was in the middle of making my own career move. I was a senior consultant in my old career, and I was moving to a junior consultant in a brand new career field. I was terrified. Like I was moving to a new company. I moved from the public sector to the private sector. I moved to a financial company in a new job, I was becoming a process design consultant. I had to do certifications for it. And I finally, you know, I got a job in the field and I got in this new company and I was terrified. I would go into these meetings and these like senior financial people are saying whole sentences using words like rehypothecation. And I'm like, what does that even mean? Like I would literally go back to my desk and be like Googling, like, what is rehypothecation? And I was so frightened. After every meeting, I'd almost just like sit in the boardroom and being like, oh my gosh, you're going to get fired. Like they're going to fire you this week. First, they're going to figure out you have no idea what you're doing and they're going to fire you. I was terrified all the time. This job also required me to commute to the office 3 days a week. And with my fatigue, I was struggling to just make it through every day. Like, I would literally wake up in the morning and I have no clue how I'm getting on the bus, how I'm even going to get out of bed. I stopped going to any events. I stopped going grocery shopping. I literally lived in my house because that's the only energy I had, was just to get to work 3 days a week and exist. That was it. Couldn't do anything else. And then because of all of these changes, financially we were struggling because we had now, like with my husband, trying to get into this new career field, and it took him a while to kind of figure out, you know, what it was he wanted to do when he left teaching. Plus he was really sick and he had to first get, you know, his back better before he could even do things. And for a long time, like, we were on one income, and we still are. Like, it's in 3 years, we're almost on about one and a little bit of income. And I went from being the girl that literally didn't even look at her credit cards, and I would just walk into stores and just buy things. And I didn't even check my credit card statements. Like, I would just assume they got paid at the end of the month, you know. And I went from that to being like, oh my gosh, our cucumbers, like, $1 off? Let's just buy like 4 or 5 cucumbers. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, they've got a sale here. Let's go here. That is so not me. But we had to be, because now we are like, we went from just having an abundance of money to not having any. And we have to be really, really careful. And I can't buy the things I want to buy anymore. Then what happened, and this was, of all these things, I got to say, this was one of the hardest ones, is my weight started increasing. And nothing had changed with my food. I knew I was abstinent. Like, nothing had changed with my abstinence. Nothing had changed with my food. But for whatever reason, I was just starting to put on weight. And I went to nutritionists. I went to doctors. There's no explanation. And I didn't know what to do. And this was hard. Like, when you're abstinent and then suddenly you're putting on weight without any reason, I would look at myself in the mirror and I hated what I saw. Every time I passed a mirror, I just like look at my stomach and be like, oh my goodness. On top of that, like, I used to love my dresses. I had like a closet full. All those dresses I never got to wear, you know, before recovery, I bought them all. And I had this closet full of the most gorgeous bandage dresses. And I felt like the hottest woman on the planet in them. And I couldn't fit into any of them. And I hated it. I really struggled with that. And then the other thing that happened was my taste buds started to change. For about seven years, I had some variety, but pretty much about the same kind of stuff. I loved my food. Like, I would have all these, like, I would make these like bean chilies that I loved, and I would always have this salad for lunch, you know, and I loved it. And then suddenly, I don't know what happened, like, everything I was eating was making me nauseous, and I swear I wasn't pregnant, but like everything, I couldn't stomach it anymore. Like, it was making me gag while I was eating it. And I don't do that. I don't eat foods that I don't like the taste of. For me, I need to eat foods that I enjoy. You know, they're not alcoholic for me. They're abstinent, but I enjoy my food. And so that was terrifying for me, to suddenly have to like find new foods. And I had to work with a nutritionist to help me figure out, okay, what if I'm not eating a salad and I'm not eating bean chilies, like, what am I eating? You know, so that was terrifying for me. And then the last thing, which was one of the hardest things that was just underlying all of this, was there was a lot of conflict with my family. My parents specifically, there were choices that my husband and I made that we prayed about. They were right for us, but my parents disagreed with, and they were really upset about. They didn't like it, and they were really angry with me that I was making those choices with him. My dad actually just stopped talking to me for like months on end. And just literally like about a month ago, it's been an ongoing situation, and I've had to go to God and do a lot of step work on it. And literally about a month ago, they shared with me that they didn't want to speak to me again. And that was horrible. It was one of the hardest things, you know. So that's a lot. Like, all of that for a person who spent 30 years of her life basically asleep with the anesthetic of food, that's a lot of life to happen in what felt like a very short period of time. It just felt like one hit after another. Like, can I just like come up for air, please? And really, everything I described to you is pretty much the same circumstances today. Like, not a lot has changed. But what I will tell you is, in these 3 years, food has not called to me, not even once. Not even once have I thought to myself, if I just eat that food that I used to eat, this can all go away. It hasn't even come to me. But even more important, like, I can honestly tell you, I am the happiest I have ever been, ever. And I'm not even, it's not like I'm like this really mature spiritual person who, I don't care about these things. I don't care about having money in the bank and nice houses and nice clothes and, I only care about God. I care very much. Like, I want the money. I want the houses. I really want my dresses, and I want to go out places. I want to buy what I want to buy. Like, I care about these things. And I can't believe it, but like, I am so happy with how my life is. I'm so at peace. I'm so safe. I really, really like who I am. Like, I'm really not everybody's cup of tea. I'm like super intense, and I'm like a little Bugs Bunny. Like, I'm just like, you can kind of hear me, even just how I talk. I'm not everybody's cup of tea, but I really like me. I think I'm kind of awesome. And if I had to redo these past 3 years, I was just reflecting on this, like, I wouldn't change a thing. And that literally makes no sense to me. With all this stuff happening, I know what the big book tells me, right? Like, the big book's really clear. When stuff like this happens, like, our dependence is on God over everything else. We say to God several times a day, "Your will, not mine, be done." We turn our will and our life over to our Creator. We ask, "How can I be of service?" That is the answer. But like, really, how do you do that? Like, seriously, like, right now, when I'm exhausted, because I am right now, I'm exhausted and I'm fed up, and things that I really don't want are happening, and the things that I really want are not happening. So then, how do you actually do that? So the turning point for me was when I was doing my step 10s with a fellow, and this fellow kept asking me these questions. She kept asking it when I would do my step 10s, "What if God is everything in this situation? What if this is happening for me, not to me? What if everything is exactly how it should be?" Meaning, like, what if this is not just like the detour? What if this is the actual path God wants me on? Like, what if this is not like a waste of my life, and I'm like, I have to pause my life until all of this other stuff gets fixed, and then I can start living? Like, what if this is the actual life God wanted for me? And what if these are the exact circumstances that God wanted, because this is the channel through which He's going to give me the exact gifts He wants to give me? And I just can't see it yet because I'm just so small and my vision is so limited. And after about the 27th time of hearing these questions, it started to click. This is the new soil that my roots are supposed to grasp onto. This is the new soil that all my thoughts and feelings and actions are supposed to be planted in. But this idea of like God is everything and surrender to God's will, it just seems so big, so philosophical. Like, what does that mean? And what I found in my last 3 years is it's not a big philosophical thought. It is a small action I take every single day to live in the soil. So I'm going to share with you the small actions that I have learned to take every single day to live in this kind of new soil. And they were not what I thought that they were, really. The first one is I have to like feel human feelings. Like, I thought that to surrender meant I have to think good thoughts. Like, I have to think big thoughts. Like, God, like, whatever happens with my husband's voiceover career, even if he fails, like, I don't care. I trust in you. And that thought meant I had surrendered. But that's, I did not, dis I discovered I don't have to have thoughts like that. I can literally be like, "God, I have literally no idea what's happening. I am terrified, and I think this is all going to blow up in flames." Like, I can have thoughts like that and still surrender. I also thought I had to think good feelings. Like, the stuff that's happening in my life, it makes me really sad. It makes me feel really scared. And I thought that if you surrender, it means that you feel good feelings. Like, if I really trusted in God, I wouldn't be so scared right now. But that wasn't true. God said to me, like, "No, it actually, the fact that you are taking these actions while you are scared, that is the act of surrender. It, like, if you were not scared, no surrender would be needed." So God said to me, your actions while you're feeling scared matter. And one of the greatest acts of surrender I could take is just to cry. Like I just, when I was, I remember there were Christmases and Easter where I just wanted to go to my in-laws' place. I love my parents, my husband's parents, and I so wanted to see them. And I couldn't go. I was just exhausted. And I would just cry. I would just cry. And that was a huge act of surrender, is just being human. The second thing was to give myself comfort. You know, I thought first in the disease, what I did was I would just sit in self-pity. Well, fine. If I can't go to Christmas and I can't go to Easter, then I'm just going to sit here and just kind of be like, you know, oh, like this always happens to me. It never happens to me. How come everybody else gets to go to Christmas? And why am I the only person who has to sit by herself? And that I know doesn't work. So I thought surrender meant, okay, you just be sad and sit at home and be sad. Like sit and stew in your awful feelings and just deal with it, you know, or just go be of service and that's it. You know, just deal with feeling awful. And God said to me, no, like go do something nice. Like do what you can do. Do something nice for yourself. Give yourself some comfort. Yeah, you can't go to Christmas, but go play the piano and sing. You love to do that. Or, you know, you love that stand-up comedian. Watch a bunch of his videos. Like laugh for a little bit. You know, I started, God taught me, like, listen to your body, honor your body, say nice things to your body. Like, it's okay, body. Like, I know you're really, really tired today. It's okay. You know what? Let's just have a rest day today. Okay? So, all right. We won't go to Christmas, but you know what? We'll wear our Christmas dress anyways. We'll even wear our Christmas heels at home, and we'll just sit together and we'll watch Jerry Seinfeld and we'll have a lovely day. You know, or to bring some lightness, like on my really harsh days, I would text my husband. He would be out grocery shopping or whatever. I'd text him and be like, you know, when you get home, I'm going to need a hug. And like not one of those like 2 second hugs. Like I need you to like hold me tight. And like, don't let go until I let go. You know, I need one of those. And I started doing that. And you know, this sounds silly and it sounds like, oh, you know, I don't know. It sounded like mumbo jumbo to me in the beginning, but I realized this actually takes a lot of courage and a lot of trust, because the reason I would sit in self-pity and be a martyr or sit in like that, like, oh, this is awful, is because I really believed that if I stopped complaining, if I stopped making a fuss internally, God would forget about me. Like if I'm just happy over here, you know, or allowing myself to have some kind of happiness while I'm upset, it's like God would forget that I'm, you know, that I'm miserable. I need to stop working on my problem, go work on somebody else's problem. You know, and these are all old ideas I had to let go of. So it was a huge act of trust for me to actually do nice things when I was sad. The third thing is I needed to be honest. Like I always thought to like be a good person in recovery meant when you were asked the question, how are you doing? Your responses are, I'm doing great. You know, I'm so grateful for God. I'm so grateful for program. I'm fine. You know, I'm doing well. And I stopped doing that because it wasn't true. And God said to me, like, be honest, like tell people, like say the truth. So when my husband would ask me, he always asked me, he's so adorable. Every morning he'd be like, how are you feeling? How did you sleep? And I'd be like, you know, I'm having a hard day today. You know, I'm really exhausted today. I'm feeling really anxious today. Today I'm feeling really scared. I would just tell him the truth. And that was terrifying for me. I've never done that. I've never, ever done that. I never tell anybody what I feel. I don't even tell myself what I feel. And I had to be honest with God, which was really hard because I thought that, you know, surrendering means I only say good things to God. Like, God, I trust you. God, you're so good to me. God, you're so powerful. You know, you always love me. You're so amazing. Like that's what I grew up thinking it meant to have faith and to surrender to God. And I realized what God told me was like, you don't have to do that. Like, I already know the thoughts in your head. There's no point trying to hide them from me. You know, just say it to me. Tell me. And so I started telling God, this kind of sucks. Like, and I'm really disappointed in you, God. Like, you know, like it's been 2 years. Please explain. Like, what possible good is coming out of the fact that I can't get a decent night's sleep? Like, I just started telling God, like, honestly, I'm really annoyed with you. Like, I don't understand why this is happening. You know, why? Like, you know, why? Like, with my husband's voiceover career, we've had to figure all this out ourselves. We set up our own like DIY home studio in our closet, and oh my god, we are both not audio engineers, and like the struggles of like trying to set up a studio and like you finally set everything up and then there's a crackle on the line and then we don't know where the crackle's coming from. It's so frustrating. And every time something like that would happen, I tell God, like, I'm angry with you. Why is this happening? And he can take it. He can take it. And he wants me to. The fourth thing is I needed to spend quality time with God. If I'm going to talk to God, in the past, it would just be when I need help, I go to God and I tell God what I need. You know, and now I needed to spend time with him every day because the only way that I can actually say to God, like, is God everything? Or God, I'm going to turn this all over to you, is if I know him. And having a relationship with someone, it's just like my husband, actually, I realized. Like, the only way we become friends is if I spend time with him. If I talk to him on a daily basis about, like, useless stuff, like just, oh, yeah, this is how he slept and this is what I had for lunch and I watched this show and I really, you know, I really like it. Like, just stuff like that, you know. It's what forms our friendship. So I realized I have to do the same with God. And so I started spending time with him every single morning. I have for the last 8 years. And there's nothing fancy. Like, I just sit with him and we just like chat. And I just tell him stuff that's happening and I listen for what he wants to say to me. And sometimes I don't even say anything to him. Some days I'm just like, God, can you just hold me? And he just like hugs me. And my whole prayer time is just him like hugging me really tight because I'm so exhausted. Sometimes I actually fall asleep and I wake up and I'm like, oh my gosh, God, I fell asleep. And he's like, that's okay. Like, for me, I call my God Papa, and I'm like his little baby, and I'm like a baby falling asleep in my Papa's arms, you know. So, and that's fine too. Like, just whatever time I spend with God, like, that's forming our relationship. I also write letters to God. Every morning I write a letter to God and I tell God exactly what's going on, and then I write a letter back from God to me, and literally, that has kept me sane in the last 3 years. I need that letter from God every single morning. Somehow, I don't know how, God says just what I need. It doesn't make any sense because I'm holding the pen, but the stuff I'm writing, I wouldn't have thought of like 2 seconds before I wrote it. Like, I'm writing it and I'm like, oh my goodness, this is good, you know, and I'm so grateful for my letters from God. And it also helps me to start to recognize his voice. So I know when this is God speaking. And today I know. It's like, for me, when I hear God's voice, it's like in my gut. I don't hear it audibly, but I hear it. I just feel it. There's like a feeling right in my stomach. I just know it. When like everything feels settled, there's like a weird feeling and I know that feeling. And when I have that, I'm like, yeah, this is it, you know? So I need to have that time with God to be able to recognize his voice. The fifth thing is that I need to speak up and say things. I always thought that like surrendering meant like you be quiet and you just like accept things as they are. Because if you say something about what you want and what you need, that's selfish. You know, that's what I thought, because everything I want is selfish. That's what I thought. And God has taught me otherwise in these last 3 years. A really great example. So when my husband said he wanted to be a voice actor, you know, for the first year, it took a lot of time to like figure it out and learn all the things. And anyways, I was terrified. Like, I felt that he should be applying to other stuff. Like, he should be applying to other jobs. And, you know, I had a picture of what kind of job he should work and what kind of salary and everything. And I just felt like voiceover acting is so risky. Like, there's no security with that. And I didn't say anything. And, you know, we were living on just my income and I was feeling this pressure, like bricks on my shoulder, that like everything was on me. And I just didn't say anything. And I kept doing the step work, but I didn't say anything, just wishing that he would apply to other jobs. And I kept kind of giving him little hints of like, I was just looking, I happened to be looking online and, you know, on LinkedIn, and I just got this job. And, you know, what do you think about it? And I just kept doing that. And he just was like, no, that's really not me. And I just kept building up this resentment until one day I just like blew up and I just like burst out crying. And he was just in complete shock, because right up until then I was like, you know, I believe in you and, you know, I'm so happy for you. And because I thought that's what it meant to surrender, you know. And I realized in that moment, and God showed me, that like it is not kind to just keep all this stuff inside and not communicate to somebody that I care about, like, this is what I want, this is what I need, and I expect them to read my mind. And so I learned now, I have to tell him what's going on with me. I have to tell him what I want. I don't tell him what to do. That's me. I don't control him. I don't tell him what to do, but I tell him what I want. So I told him, I was like, you know what, the truth is, I don't just need because honestly, like, we have enough money to meet our expenses, but that's not enough for me. I don't just need financial sufficiency. I need financial stability. Like, I need to know where our money is coming from. I need to know that we're stable. And I feel like I'm drowning right now, you know, and I didn't tell him how to fix it. I just said, what do you think we should do? Can you help me? And it turns out my husband actually has really good ideas when I tell him things, you know, and we worked together. We came up with good ideas. He's like, okay, you know what? Now that I know that you feel like this, you know what? While I'm working on the voiceover thing, I'm going to get a part-time job. And he did, you know, and so we had some income coming there and it helped me so much. And then he also was like, you know what we'll do is let's give voiceover a year. Like, so that way you feel a little bit of like, this is not an unending thing that we don't know, you know, what's going to happen ever. Let's give it a year. Let's see how it goes. And after one year, let's talk about it and see if we both think we should continue. So I'm so grateful that I said something. I also learned, and God has shown me, that I have to ask others for help too. I always thought that if I just really surrender, I don't need anyone else. I should just be able to go to God, get what I need, and that's it. And even in terms of comfort, like, everything I should need for my life and for me should come from that time that I spend with God. And the reason I got to this, you know, is because I, like, whenever I've tried to ask people for help, I just get so dependent on them. Like, whether it's my husband or doctors or my boss or my sponsor or fellows, whenever I've tried to go to people for help, it's like, I end up wanting them to fix my feelings. It's like, I put all my stuff on them. It's like, here, you fix my feelings. You make me feel better. You make me think different thoughts. Please make my decisions for me. You know, just anybody, please just take my problems and you fix them or make my decisions for me. And many times they, going to other people for help has been my way of avoiding God, because I was honestly scared of God. So I'd rather go to a human being that I can kind of manipulate and control, sort of, or at least I thought I could, than go to God who, you know, I can't manipulate at all. So I would go to other people. So I thought the opposite was that I just have to go to God and be okay with just God. And what I, after a lot of prayer and like talking to God, what God showed me was that I don't want you to be dependent on people that way, because you're putting a burden on them that was never meant to be on them, you know. But I also don't want you to come just to me, because I want to reach you through all these different channels. Like, what I discovered God wanted me to be was not dependent, but interdependent. And I had no idea that there was a difference, you know. And what God showed me was that he wants me to rely on him for the things that only he can give me. Only God can give me the intuition for my next right action. Only God knows what's right for me. Only God can give me peace. Only God can actually remove resentments and fears from me, because that like requires changing my feelings. I can't change my feelings. Other people can't change my feelings. But God has. Like, he's literally like removed feelings from me, and like, I don't know how that happens, you know. So only he can give me peace, only he can give me directions, and only he can make certain outcomes happen and certain circumstances happen. That's way outside me or anybody else's, you know, pay grade. But he wants me to rely on other people for the things they can give me: companionship, practical wisdom, kindness, even professional expertise. Like, I can't tell you the number of times I've gone to God and God's been like, well, what does your doctor say? Have you asked your doctor? And I'm like, I don't want to go to my doctor. I don't want to do blood tests. Can't you just tell me what's wrong with me? You know, and God wants me to go to these people and get these things. I have no idea why, actually, because I feel like he can just do this himself. So, but for whatever reason, he's been telling me to do that, you know? And so I still do I do step 10s every single day, but they're different now for me. Because the power in it is not the analysis. It's not what anybody says after the step 10. The prayer part is the biggest part. And I love the feedback that I get from people. It's always so helpful. But, you know, in a way, it doesn't matter now, the feedback that I get. It's just the process of, like, picking up the phone, calling a fellow, doing my step 10, and whatever they share, I listen. And that process itself of saying it out loud. And for me, in a step 10, it's me, God, and another person all at the same time. And I'm grateful because I do step 10s, and I'm grateful because the fellows I do it with, they don't tell me what to do. They don't give me advice. I don't need that, and I don't want it anymore. I used to want it very much. In fact, I remember once I called my sponsor to make a really hard decision about my family, and really, like, I know I was, you know, doing my regular step work, but kind of in the back of my mind, I was like, can you just tell me what to do, please? And my sponsor listened, and she was like, you know, honestly, you sound like you're doing everything program tells us to do. I don't have any feedback to give you. And I'm like, but please tell me what to do, you know, and but I'm grateful because I don't need them to do that. Only God knows what I need to do. But I love that he works through these other people just to like drop these little gems in my life. They're his gifts to me and they help me in their own small way, you know. The seventh thing is God wants me to take small acts of courage. And this is not, you know, before recovery, action was frantic action. You know, when I discover, like, you know, say as an example, my husband's voiceover acting career, because that's a big thing for me. Like, my response to that is, okay, fine. I'm going to, like, research the crap out of this. I'm going to go to ChatGPT. I'm going to go to Google. I'm going to put my trust and reliance on those. I'm going to, like, ask all these questions. I'm going to figure everything out. I'm going to, you know, do all this. And then I'm going to go into an Excel. And Excel is, I love Excel. I just plan my whole life in there. I'm going to put everything in there. And I'm going to make a plan. And then we're going to follow the plan. You know, that has never helped. It's just, it's like, it's that frantic action that I know is not peaceful. It's not an action of recovery. And so I thought surrender meant that you don't take any action. You just wait for things to change. You just learn to accept things the way they are, and you just wait for things to change. And what God has shown me is that's not true either for me. Take the small next right action. It's nothing big, nothing fancy. It's usually really small. It's, you know, when it came to my health, like my fatigue, I think it was about 2 years ago where we got to a really bad point. Like, I was struggling to the point where I could not function, and I was struggling to even just do my job. It was very bad. We were at the point where we were thinking I might actually have to go on like long-term disability because we didn't know what I was going to do. And God was like, you know, why don't you just take one action? Okay, the doctors don't know what to do. A couple of people have mentioned a naturopath. Why don't you just like look it up? Just look up a naturopath, set up a meet and greet. And this is huge acts of courage for me because I was so overwhelmed by the idea of one more appointment with one more specialist. You know, but my doctor had suggested a therapist and I was just so overwhelmed by finding one. But it was like, okay, small act of courage. Just, you used to have a therapist before. Why don't you just go see if she's still practicing? Go look it up. You know, so I started taking small actions. Why don't you go, you know what, your weight has increased, you can't wear those old clothes anymore, just go buy a new dress. You know, why don't you go do that? You know, okay, you don't like salads anymore. Okay, let's look up what's another vegetable you can have instead? You know, let's go find another vegetable. Just one act of courage every day. And I can't even tell you, like, just that one action, like, it made a huge difference because it was like, okay, I'm doing my part. God's going to do the other stuff. I can't change my fatigue. I can't change my weight. I can't change how I look at my body in the mirror. Like, none of those things I can change. But I can do this one small thing. And it made a huge difference. The next thing is I needed to see that God's solutions were different from my solutions. And I had to be open because I wanted what I wanted. My answers to this is that my fatigue should go away. My weight should go down. My job should tell me I should work from home. My husband should become the most successful voiceover actor in the industry. And he should get an Oscar for his work. Like, that's my solutions to things. You know, but God's solutions are so different. You know, my husband and I have wanted to buy a house. I've always wanted a little townhouse forever. And when we got married, I was devastated because after our income changed, we wanted to buy a house and we looked it up and the mortgage rates were so high. The house prices were so high. There was not a chance at all. And we looked at it each other. I cried. We decided, you know what, we're going to be in our condo for at least the next 5 to 7 years. We just have to accept it and move on, you know. And then in December, we had a leak in our condo for like the fifth time. Water, it was horrible. Water was coming out of the floorboards. And I was devastated because I'm like, we are so exhausted. We are both sick. He's in pain. I can barely move. Now we have to move all our stuff out. We have to have contractors in here. We have to pay, like, we had to go through insurance. Like, we were so fed up. And my husband was like, you know, if we're going to go through all this again, like, what, maybe we should just look at selling this place and buying another place. So I'm like, that's crazy. Like, we already decided, like, mortgage rates are bad, house prices are bad, but okay, whatever. Let me just Google this. It just happened to be a time when the house market was super low, mortgage rates were lower than they had been ever, and somehow we could afford a house just at that time when the leak happened. And like in the next 3 months, I don't even know how it happened. Like, we sold our condo in a really bad condo market. We found our dream home that I don't even know how we afforded. I really don't. And today we're in our dream home. Like, this was not supposed to happen for another 3 or 4 years. And here we are, all because of a leak that I thought was the worst thing that ever happened to me. So now I've realized that God's solutions look really different from the ones that I think should happen. The next thing is that God wants me to take risks. He wants me to use my brain. You know, he wants me. I always thought that surrender meant you sit back and you wait for instruction from God. Don't move until God has told you exactly what to do. Or you tell God, like, hey, God, the number of times I'd go to God, this is especially when we were trying house hunting. This is terrifying to me. I hate making decisions. I hate picking between things, you know, because it's like, what if I picked the wrong thing? What if that was meant to be our house and I picked the wrong house? You know, and anyways, we found this house that, like, I fell in love with. When I saw it, and I really, really wanted God to kind of give his stamp of approval. So every day in prayer, I would just go and be like, God, is this the house for me? Please, please, like, please show me, give me a sign that this is the house you want me to buy. And you know what I realized is underneath that, what I was really saying is the belief was if I pick the exact right house, then we won't have problems. You know, our closing will go smoothly. Our mortgage will go smoothly. There won't be a hidden leak in the roof. If I pick the house God wants me to pick, we won't have house problems. That was the real belief, you know. And what God said to me was, he said, no, I'm not picking the house. This is yours and your husband's choice. You pick the house. Pick whichever house. You want to pick this house? You want to pick that house? No problem. Pick the house. Go out there. I gave you a brain. I gave you talents. Use them. Do your homework, talk to the real estate agent, go look up the different parts of the house, like, you know, do your stuff and then pick it together with your husband. This is your choice. I will be there with you no matter which house you pick. I will be there with you no matter which job you pick. And then he said the most important thing to me, whichever house you pick, there will be problems, lots of problems. And those problems are really important for your well-being. Those, like, you can't be well without those problems. And I realized, like, I'm a problem solver at heart. I would be bored silly if I had no problems to solve. So I need problems in my life. They're really good for me. And the tenth thing is I needed to be like a detective, because I realized that everything that happens, God is sending me a gift in it. And I just need to find that gift, you know? And so I started to build these eyes where, what if God is giving me exactly what I need and it just doesn't look like it right now? You know, like, as an example, today I realized, you know, with this fatigue, it's been horrible, like being so exhausted all the time. But, you know, in these last 3 years, I have learned to love my body more because I've had to just listen to it. I have, because of my weight gain, I have learned now how to love my, like, just look at myself and be like, I love you. You're beautiful. You look nice in that dress, even though I'm not in the dresses I want to be. You know, my husband's got to look at me and be like, you look stunning, even though I don't feel like I look stunning, you know? And I've got to receive a kind of love from him, you know? Like, I just imagine from his perspective, 6 months into your marriage and your wife is like a comatose person on the couch. I couldn't move. And here my husband is, he does the laundry, he does the dishes, he goes, does the groceries, doesn't complain. He comes and puts the blanket over me, kisses me on my forehead when I can't function, like, when he's in pain too, like, how, like, I wouldn't have had the chance to be loved like that if I was just like this super, you know, if I could just be super energetic and just could take care of myself all the time, you know. Even the fact that he wants to be a voice actor, it was really hard. But God, like, with God's direction, God showed me, he was like, I want you to help him. I want you to participate in it. And so we work as a team now. We have figured all this out, but together we have built our own home studio. Like, I don't even know how. I can't barely function on my own phone. But I've learned 5 different software programs. I've now learned how to create animated videos for him to voice over so that he can have a portfolio. And, like, what God said to me is, I know what you really want. You want, like, more than you want a house and clothes, What you want is a lasting, loving marriage. And I know the exact combination of challenges and comfort, laughter and tears that are going to bring you guys together. And I'm going to give that to you, you know, so just hold on. What you're looking at now is just the raw materials. You haven't seen the final product yet. Just give it a minute, you know. So I've started to have these detective eyes. I've also started to let God fill these needs in a different way, you know, ways that I wasn't expecting, because God does that. Because when I feel like I always wanted to be filled the way I wanted to be filled, you know, when my parents stopped speaking to me, it was devastating to me. But God sent me people with like mom energy and dad energy all over the place. My in-laws just poured so much love on me. My boss, like, he's like this older guy, and he just like, he's like such a dad to all of us in the team, you know. And like, God sent me this like dad energy through my dad. He even sent me this sponsee. She was the same age as my mom, and she had a daughter that was the same age as me. And every call she'd be like, okay, hi honey, and bye honey. And I don't know, it just, it was like God was sending me these like moms and dads, you know. And if I focus so much on the thing I don't have, I'll miss out on the thing that God is giving me in a different way. I also had to let go of blame. You know, when I just last year, actually, after like 2 years of struggling with this fatigue, I finally got to a naturopath and they did blood tests. And what they discovered is that I have hypothyroidism. And I Googled it, and I literally I'm like a textbook case of hypothyroidism. And I was so angry with my doctor. I'm like, how did you not look at my symptoms and be like, this is a thyroid issue? You know, like, why did I have to suffer for 2 years? Why am I living with nightmares? Why did I have to go through weight gain? Why have I sold my favorite dresses and missed out on weddings and baby showers and birthdays? Why have I lost my 2 years of married life? Because, like, you didn't diagnose a basic thing that's so common, where I'm a textbook case of it. I was so angry until I reflected and went to God with it and realized that if God is everything, then nothing is wasted. And really, truly, when I look back at it, I don't regret it, because I realized, you know, today I'm working with a therapist, and the only reason is because they didn't know this was a medical issue. We thought this was anxiety. You know, my doctor suggested I go to a therapist. This therapist is so wonderful. Like, she's just, honestly, if she wasn't my therapist, I just want to be her friend. She's such a wonderful gift in my life, and she has helped me so much in the last 6 months on other stuff. And I wouldn't have her today if my doctor had figured it out 2 years ago. My husband and I wouldn't have the relationship we have today if they had figured this out, you know, 2 years ago. I wouldn't be at peace with my body today if I hadn't gone through that journey of like putting on the weight and buying new clothes and, you know, and just struggling with tiredness. I wouldn't be who I am today. And I'm so grateful. If God is everything, he can use even people's worst mistakes. Nobody can screw me over, because he's got some kind of like spiritual jiu-jitsu. Like, even if someone tries to screw me over, he's able to just use it for my highest good anyway. The last thing I'll say is, no matter what happens, the last thing is I have to keep taking my program actions. And this was really hard, because there were days where I couldn't even function. Forget about, like, I was falling asleep at my meetings because I was so exhausted. But for me, my program actions, whether it's going to meetings, prayer and meditation, doing my step 10 calls, my step work, my calling my sponsor, sponsoring other people, doing prep, like, these are all my spiritual actions. To me, these are like my chemotherapy. Like, these aren't, it's not like Advil where, like, okay, I take it when I'm feeling bad and I don't take it when I'm, you know, when I don't need it. That's just not how it works for me. It's like chemotherapy. No matter what is happening in my life, I have to take that medication, and I do. And I'll tell you, when I, like, the days I've been the most exhausted, like, there's days where usually by about 6 p.m. I'm done. Like, I've got nothing left, and I know the rest of the day is going to be on the couch. And then a newcomer will call, and I will look at my phone and be like, I can't do this. And because I know this is my chemo, I pick up the phone and I'm talking to this newcomer, and like, suddenly I'm like getting up off the couch and I'm like walking around. And I'm like animatedly talking to them about, you know, the allergy to the body and the twist of the mind. And my husband's looking at me like, what is going on with you? Like, you were just comatose on the couch a minute ago. And literally the only time I have energy and I'm like all, you know, up in arms is when I'm sharing like this at a meeting. Like, you wouldn't think I have fatigue if you hear my voice, but like this is when I get my energy, or when I'm talking to a newcomer. And I bet you after this call, I'm going to go like take a nap for like 3 hours because I'm exhausted, you know. So the final and final, I'll say that step three is a choice I make every single day. I'm making it today by taking these actions. It's not a thought. It's not a feeling. I can feel any thought, any feeling. But if I take these little actions, that is what my step three is. And I'll tell you, in this last week, you know, in the last few months, I've come to love my job. Like, I've gotten really good at it. My clients like me. I love them. I love my team. We're just such a fun team. And my boss is amazing. I'm a process design consultant, and I love it. And I get to work from home. Like, I love my job. Less than 2 weeks ago, my company announced a complete reorganization. They laid off over 10% of people. I'm so grateful I have a job. But every single one of us that's left behind has been reorganized. We've been completely scattered. I have a new job. Literally a new title. I've been sent to a new team, a new leader, a new, like, different clients. Like, everything is different. I'm not a process design consultant. I am now a manager, analyst. I don't even know what a manager, analyst is. I'm going to find out on June 1st. And I am terrified. I literally have no idea. I don't even know if they're going to take away my work from home accommodation because of my fatigue. Like, I am terrified. I have no idea what's coming in June. What I want to do is go on LinkedIn and frantically start applying to other jobs. But I know that's not the action I need to take. And it's okay if I don't know anything, because what if God is everything? What if this new leader, this new team, this new job is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing right now? What if through this job, this new change, I'm going to learn new skills? And what if I'm going to enjoy my job even more? I'm going to discover that I love this new job. Or what if this job is meant to make me so miserable, I hate this job, that it actually gives me the courage to go get a new job, the job that God wants me to be in now? You know, what if this is just a stepping stone to my next job? I have no idea. But whether this job makes me love it or hate it, it's the way through which God is going to get me to be the person he wants me to be and who I want to be. Because God has had the best track record of taking care of me. When I look back at the evidence, there is not one single thing that's happened to me that's been wasted, that has not been for my highest good, that I look back and I say, and I can't see a single reason that happened, or I can't, that I would actually even change. You know, so tonight I'll just end with, this is the end of my step three prayer. I wrote my own step three prayer, and I say it every morning. I pray it every morning. And this is the ending of it. I say, Papa, you have given me every grace for today, and you have surrounded me with angels to help me. Even when I make a mistake, you take care of me, and you make the best outcome for everyone involved, not just me. Everything that happens today is your gift to me. I don't need to plan, orchestrate, or worry about anything. You've got me, and I'm safe with you. Thanks for letting me share.
Oh, Crystal, thank you so much for this captivating, profound, and very inspiring presentation this morning. Thank you so very much for all that you gave to us. The share ID for today, 23,485. That's 23485 for this morning's presentation. Crystal's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so do stay tuned for that. And we will now transition to a question and answer segment with Crystal. You can pose a question by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Yes, R.
Esther K.
Lisa C.
Okay, I have Dorita P., Hanayeta, Jason KP, Lisa C.
Denise O.
Is that Denise O?
Correct.
Okay.
Diana Y.
Karen K.
Was that Karen K?
Yes, please.
Okay, that's a great list. Again, Dorita P., Hanayeta R., Jason KP, Lisa C., Denise O., Diana Y., and Karen K. Dorita P., your question, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you so much for your service. Thank you, Crystal. Wow. I had a lot of questions, but my main question is, could you share with us, you remind me of Job in the Bible, and I just see you and your husband just prospering from this point on. My question is, could you share with us, you kind of shared how you are growing your relationship with God, but could you share with us how you came to your initial belief? I mean, did you grow up with a belief? Can you share at the beginnings of your belief system or faith?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Dorita. That's my favorite thing to share, because when I came into program, I was the most religious person you would have ever met. All I wanted to be was a nun. I'm Catholic, and I wanted to be a nun. There were these nuns in Toronto, and I just hung around them all the time. And I just thought, you know, if I just spend all my time with them, one day they would just forget that I'm not a nun and just give me a habit and let me be one of them, you know. And I would pray, and because I wanted to be a nun, like I prayed very often. I go to mass every day. I've actually given talks in front of like 18,000 people about my faith. And I was just the most religious person you met. My uncles and aunts would come to me and say, Crystal, like, can you please pray for me? I would be the person leading our Bible studies, you know. So it was literally, I was just like moments away from being canonized, like St. Crystal, you know, in my mind. And it was quite a shock for me when I came into program and I put down the food and I realized that I actually don't have a relationship with God. I'm actually terrified of God, you know, and all these things I was doing was like this little performance, this little contract, you know, like I'll be a good girl and you take care of me, or, you know, I can't ever do the wrong thing because then God will be mad at me. Like it was, and if I just hung around like really, really, really religious, holy people, I'll kind of by osmosis be a really religious, holy person, you know. And that's, so it was quite a shock when I realized I'd never met God. And so I had to build my relationship with God like from the ground up. I had to literally kind of be like, hey, God, like I'm Crystal, you know, nice to meet you. And just like a regular relationship, like I had to start talking to God like one-on-one. I, you know, instead of, there's nothing, you know, prayers are wonderful, but I actually stopped that because I found that it was a way to not actually talk to him. So I actually just started like chatting. Like I was like, okay, let me just tell you what's like happening with me, you know, so I had to start from like the ground up, you know, and so the practice of spending time every single day and just chatting really, really helped me. And I'll just share one of my little experiences that I had, because I started, like, I would just talk out loud. Like, I would be driving to my meeting, and I just, like, chat with God and be like, I'd even say to God, I'm like, this feels really awkward. If someone's looking at me, you know, when I'm parked at the intersection, they must think I'm crazy, but whatever, I'm just going to talk to you. And this is what's going on in the week. And I just talked to God, and that's what helped me it was the beginning point of our relationship, you know, with me actually just sitting and chatting and telling God how I felt every single day and letting him talk to me. I would just, after I chatted, then I'd just like be quiet for a while. And I started to hear, and I couldn't hear it in the beginning, but slowly over time, that relationship started to bud into something real. But it took a long time because I remember I had to learn, like, I can't have a 30-year relationship on the first date. You know, like it's going to take time before this turns into a actual relationship, and it's going to be awkward in the beginning, and that's okay. So I started to not want anybody else's relationship with God, but just mine, wherever it was, you know. It wasn't great for a long time. I was scared of God for a very long time, but by those consistent actions and chatting with him and telling him honestly how I felt every day, that's what formed that relationship. I hope that helps, Dorita.
Thanks, Dorita, for your
yes, thank you.
Next up, Hanietta R., your question, please.
Thank you, Leia, for your service and your continued belief in all of us. I'm like Crystal. I'm almost at a loss for words, which that's a lot for me. You were amazing. I also just came up on a time where I was extremely tired all the time. And mine was very easy. They found out that I was living in dehydration, that I wasn't getting enough fluids, and I thought I was drinking all the time. So, but you used a word, one of the questions, I used a word, inner, and I can't see it, I wrote it in pen, inner deportation. Do you know which word I'm talking about? Do you know?
No, sorry. Can you say that again, please, Hanietta?
Inner, this is Hanietta. And
yes.
Interdependent. Oh, maybe
interdependent.
You use interdependent.
Yes.
And you use
yes.
that as referring to your higher power. And I wanted to know what that was. I'm not sure I understood that. And I also wanted to know if you have WhatsApp.
Yeah, thank you, Hanietta. And yes, first I do. I do have WhatsApp. I live on WhatsApp. So yes, I'm definitely available on WhatsApp. The interdependence. I had never really thought of that word before. And actually for me, what that meant is, what that meant for me, actually that was how God described my relationship with other people. So for me and God, I depend on God for that. That for me is a relationship of dependence, meaning I go to God for direction, intuition, and for guidance, for all the circumstances, outcomes, like all of that is with God. I can't do a thing about all of that. And he gives me all of that, even a lot of comfort, like all of that comes from God, you know, with my feelings and my thoughts and all of that stuff. God still wants me to take action. And so there's that. That's the kind of relationship between me and God. The interdependence part is how God said he wants me to be with other people. He doesn't want me to be fully dependent, but he also doesn't want me to be independent. Like I remember many times, it's like my husband would offer to do something for me, and I'd be like, I can do that. Like I can do that for myself. I don't need him to do that for me. Or I'd feel bad that he was doing something for me and be like, oh shoot, like he shouldn't have to do that. And God would say to me, like, just let him love you. Like, just receive it. You know, I want you, like, I depend on my husband for, like, I depend on him to feel good about myself. When he says things like, oh my gosh, you look so gorgeous in that dress. And like, you know, even though my hair is thinning from all of my health problems, like, oh, your hair looks so pretty today. Like, it makes me feel good about me. And I thought that that was a bad thing, that I was depending on him. And what God showed me is, yes, if I put the entire burden of how I feel about myself on my poor little husband, that's not good. That's a burden that shouldn't be on him. But it's very okay to go to the people that God has put in my life and receive things from them and love the gifts that I receive from them and depend on those gifts that I receive from them. So that was interdependence that I learned, to go to fellows, to go to God and love and receive the gifts that they give me, but not put the entire burden of my well-being, of my decisions, of my needs and wants on them. And it's a very fine balance, honestly, Hanietta. Like half the time I don't know, like I'm just like, there's no formula, because I would really like it if he could give me a formula where it's like, this is the line, and when you cross the line, now you're too dependent, and when you're on this side of the line, you're perfectly fine. I would really like that, but there's no formula for that. It's on a daily basis. I'm using my intuition to know, like, this, yes, in this situation, just let my husband help me. As an example, I hate making decisions. My husband is excellent at making decisions. He just has this, like, gut instinct, and he knows, yep, it's this house. It's this Amazon product. Like, he just knows. And I struggle over buying things at the dollar store. Like, I struggle. So it's like, it's a fine dependence. And sometimes it's like, okay, go to my husband, let him use his gift. He's great at this. Rely on him for, you know, what should we do in this situation? I'll do the research. You pick, you know, which thing we should go with. And other times it's like, no, Crystal, you got to make this decision yourself. It's not on your husband to doing it. And I don't know which is which. I have to use my intuition. And that's what God has showed me, is interdependence. That fine balance on letting people give me their gifts and relying on them, and then also relying on myself and God for intuition. It's a fine balance, and I'm still learning how to do it every single day. I hope that helps. And we can
thank
chat
you
more
thank
about
you.
That.
Thank you, Hanietta. Jason,
and you are
KP.
A beautiful person.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Jason, your turn.
Good morning, Jason KP. Just thank you so much. You know, you talked about fear and having faith regardless, and you also talked about expressing your feelings. Sometimes I have people do a 10th step and they, you know, and there's lots of legitimate human needs, you know, and just, I try to acknowledge that. When do feelings become character defects? Because fear can be a feeling, you know, anger can be a feeling, resentment. How do you suss those out, feeling versus a character defect, acknowledging both, being human and having those feelings, but also noticing, well, there's character defects in here as well. I hope that makes sense.
Oh, gosh, Jason, that totally makes sense. And for me, that's another fine line. I find that with God, like, everything's a balance. I would really like things to be black and white. And every time he keeps bringing me into this gray zone of, like, balance, you know. But totally, like, that has been one of the greatest gifts for me when I do my step 10s and when I talk to my sponsors. Is many times I'll do a step 10 and they'll be like, honey, that's not a step 10. Like, you're sad. Like, you're just sad. And you're allowed to be sad. Like, be sad. You know, there's nothing alcoholic here. The alcoholic thinking for me when that I need to put through step work is when I'm believing that everything in the situation is about me and it's on me to fix it. When I'm believing those beliefs and I'm starting to act on those beliefs, that's when that's alcoholic for me. You know, as an example, about 2 years ago, I was at a job. I really didn't like the job. I joined that company because I really loved the leader. Like my, you know, this person invited me to work with her. I love working for her. And I really didn't like the company, didn't like the job, but I loved working with her. And she got let go. And I was stuck with this team of people and this job that I really couldn't stand. But more importantly, like, I loved working with this woman. So sad. I actually cried for a whole week, like a whole week every day. I cried because I was so sad that I didn't get to work with her anymore. And that was just emotion. It's just sadness. And I realized, like, yeah, that's human feelings. I'm allowed to be sad and good. Good for me for feeling sad. I never got to feel sad for 30 years because I stuffed it down with food. I get to feel sad now. But when I start to believe that the only way I can be okay at work is if she's there, that this new leader, I got to protect myself from her. I got to, you know, I can't ever be truthful with her. I got to do this, and this at work to, like, watch my back because now I'm going to be next. Like, when those start honest, they're not true. I don't have any information about that. When I start to think that I need to go fix this in some way, that's when it turns into alcoholic actions for me. I will also say for me, I don't see these as character defects in that, like, they're a bad thing. What I see them as is just, these are patterns that no longer work for me. And I'll just give a really other quick example. Just this past month, we just finished buying our house. We used a line of credit and with a large amount, and we paid it off. Like, right when we bought our house, we paid it off. And one evening, I got an email from our bank saying that your line of credit, which is a really large line of credit, is down to $100 balance, meaning there's only $100 left that you can borrow, which means someone has borrowed like tens of thousands of dollars and you only have this much left. And I'm like, what does that mean? This is 10 o'clock at night. I have no idea what that means. How could we, like, who's borrowed this money? I tried to log into the bank account and, like, I can't get in. They're saying we can't authenticate you. I called the bank and they're like, I'm sorry, we're not able to authenticate you using your password and other information. I was in full-scale panic mode and they're like, there's nothing we can do. You have to go to the bank in the morning and, you know, and deal with this. That was a lot of fear, you know. And when we went to the bank the next day, like, everything was fine. Like, it was completely fine. Nobody had stolen our identity. We didn't owe hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, it was all fine. You know, there was just a misunderstanding and it was okay, you know, in the email. It was fine. But I remember I talked to my sponsor and I'm like, I feel so disappointed in myself. Like, I totally panicked. And so what I realized in that situation, speaking with her and going to God, is, yeah, I am human. That's a human reaction to panic when you think someone's stolen $100,000 from you, you know, but just reflecting back, like, I don't need to panic like that anymore. That's an old pattern that I don't need anymore. It doesn't help me. It hurts me. Like, I didn't sleep that night. I spent that night. It was a horrible, miserable night for nothing because God took care of everything anyway. So it was less about, like, it's a character defect I need to get rid of and more like, why am I putting myself through this? Like, I don't need this anymore. You know, God's always taking care of me, so why am I putting myself through this? And when I started to shift that lens from, like, looking at it as, like, a critical behavior that I shouldn't do anymore versus, like, yeah, this is human, but it's not serving me. You know, so do I really want to put myself through all of that pain and suffering, or do I just want to wait and talk to the bank in the morning and like, it's probably going to be fine. And even, but the other part, sorry, I'll just end with this, is that the realization that night was, even if my husband and I owe $100,000, we're going to be okay. I don't know how. We'll sell what we have to sell. We'll do what we have to do, but we're going to be okay. So that was what I was starting to realize, is I don't need the fear anymore. And that, I find that that helped me a lot. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Jason, for your question. Lisa C., your turn.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much. This was just wonderful. I've always enjoyed your shares and your special editions, Crystal. And I'm also so grateful that other fellows have asked. I wrote down three questions, and other fellows asked two of the three, so that made it very easy to decide which one to ask. So here it is. I am just curious if you could speak a little bit about your relationship with your partner as it relates to your spiritual life. Like, do you share a bond with your partner? And if yes, how did you develop it together, and how do you continue to develop it together? And if not, like, how do you, and this is the part of the question that I'm really curious about, if it relates, how do you work on your connection with God and continue to deepen your bond with your husband? Like, is it something that, you know, how are you able to kind of, translate, if needed, like your spiritual growth into that bond and continuing to nurture that bond?
Oh, thank you so much for that question, Lisa. This is my favorite topic because my husband's my favorite person. He's just the most, I love him. Anyways, I got super, super lucky. But yeah, for me, the reason I'm like, I can't even tell you, like, each of the things, one of my biggest fears in life is that I will, my husband will leave me, he will divorce me, and I'll be alone. Like, that is, it's one of my deepest fears. And a lot of my step 10s kind of end in that, you know, in that, like, he's going to leave me and I'm going to be alone. Like, that's always a fear for me. And my, with these things, that, and I'm always fearful of, like, okay, well, obviously, you know, financial, like, having financial difficulty, having family conflict, you know, with my parents, like, my parents don't, like, they don't like my husband, they don't want to be around my husband, like, it's just a difficult, really difficult situation, you know, and I had to kind of stand up for my husband there, and that was very, very hard. Him taking on a new career, us being on one income, on my income, and him not working, me making more money than he does, like, I don't know about you, but, like, Hollywood said that all of those things cause marriages to break, you know, so I was terrified all the time, and us also discovering that we likely may not be able to have children as well. And, like, all of these things are, I thought, break marriages, you know, and what has, and these are the things that actually brought us closer together. And slowly that fear of divorce and him leaving me is going away, because I'm realizing that whatever circumstances are happening to me, what I have to do is go all in. Like, I just have to show up today and love him. That is my job. And if we both choose each other every single day, these circumstances actually make us stronger, not weaker. You know, as an example, because we have financial difficulty, because of that, we've had to, we sit every single week and do a budget. We sit down and track our expenses every single week. And, like, because of that, we have had to have such difficult talks. I don't know about you, it's really hard to get on the same page with another human on, like, what is a need and what is a want and why are we spending money on this and I think we should spend money on this. And, like, it's really hard because we have totally different ideas about those things. And, but because we've had to do that on a weekly basis, today we have a language to talk about money. We're actually on the same page about money. We can have really difficult talks about it and be okay. Like, that was really hard to get to, and it was only because we didn't have a choice, you know. So all of these circumstances that God sent me were channels through which I got to, it brought us closer together. But the only way that happened was through these circumstances, I did the step work and I grew spiritually. I had to face my fears. I had to face the fact that, honestly, it does not matter how much money I have in the bank, I am always going to be afraid that we don't have enough. So I had to learn to be okay with, like, for today, I've got enough money in the bank. You know, I had to work through that fear. It was really hard for me. I had to work through the fear of disappointing my parents. Like, I had to realize that today I'm a wife before I'm a daughter. At least that was what it was for me. And so I had to stand up to my parents and say, I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, I know you're really disappointed. I know you're really upset, but this is the decision that my husband and I have made. And that's it, you know, like, and they were really angry with me and they wanted us to change it. And it was very hard for me. I don't like my parents being angry with me, you know. Another huge learning for me was I had to learn to let my husband be. Like, I wanted to control. Like, I just, like, especially with his voiceover career, like, I want to tell him how to audition. This is how you hold a mic. This is the ones you should audition for. Actually, if I could just do the auditions for him, that would be the best. You know, and God said to me, like, yeah, I want you to be involved. I want you to help him with your skills. But this is his career, not yours. This is his journey. Your job is to be his number one fan. More than anything else, you are his number one fan. Your job in 10 years when he's a successful voice actor, does he want to remember that his wife told him he wouldn't make it, or that she said every day, even when he didn't have any job, that she was proud of him? I had to let him have his own journey. Let him fail. If he's supposed to fail in voiceover acting, then he's supposed to fail. Maybe this is not meant to be his career. Maybe it's just a stepping stone to what he's meant to be. But that was not mine to fix. I'll just end by saying my husband is a big, big fan of program. He can see, because he can see every time I do my program work, every time I go to God, and he'll come to me and be like, are you going to go to Papa now? You know, or he'll be like, you know, are you going to do a step 10 now about this? So he loved all this stuff, because every time I do that, I seem to come back and love him better and love him more. So I'm very grateful. I found that my spiritual life is, and my husband's not one that like talks a lot about God, you know, but he loves the program work that I do, because it means I get to be like a, you know, I get to be the wife I want to be to him. And so I'm very, very grateful. My spirit, my God just keeps leading me to my husband. And I find that my husband is the channel through which God loves me. Like, I can just tell, like, the way many times I ask God, like, God, help me to see myself through my husband's eyes, because I know that's how God looks at me too. Like, I will look at myself in the mirror and be like, oh my gosh, I've got all this loose skin. I basically look like kind of like a melted candle, you know? And my husband will look at me and be like, I love it. Like, he doesn't just like tolerate all my loose skin. He's like, oh my gosh, it's so cute. It's so adorable. And I'd be like, how do you see that? Like, what are you seeing that I'm not seeing in the mirror, you know? So I'll ask God, help me to see myself through my husband's eyes. So yeah, I find that like God and my husband are like in cahoots. They're like working together to like help me become, you know, the person that I want to be. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Lisa C. Denise O. Your question, please. Denise O, star one to unmute.
Thank you. This is Denise O in California. Thank you, Crystal, so much. Your share was so beautiful and thought-provoking. My question this morning is regarding the letters that you write to and from God, and could you share more about the process of how you do that?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I love that practice. I've been doing it now for, I think, about 7 years every day, and I absolutely love it. So what I do in the morning is I have a little daily reader. So I'll read a little passage from there. And then for about like 20, 25 minutes, I just sit. I literally do this like first thing in the morning. I wake up, I like prop up my pillow, and I just sit down in my bed. And I just like, God, like just like chatting. Sometimes I'm chatting, but like most of the time now, it's not even chatting. It's just like, I feel like God and I are just holding hands and we're like walking in like a meadow or something, which is crazy because I'm not an outdoorsy person, but for whatever reason in my prayers, I am. And so we're just like walking together, or many times actually it's just him like hugging me, like just me, like just like getting enfolded in his like big arms, you know? And I just, that's usually my prayer time with God, you know? And if there's something on my mind, I'll talk to him about it and listen. And after that, about, you know, 20, 25 minutes, I'm in like a, and I'll just say, by the way, that is crazy for me to spend, like, have ADHD and like that is literally the only time in the day when I'm not doing at least three things at once. I don't even know how that happens. But after that prayer time, I feel like I'm in a totally different place. You know, everything in my head is like slowed down. I'm a different person. And then I open up, I used to have a notebook. Now I have a little digital tablet that I can write on like a pen. And so I would open up my notebook, and on one side of the page, I would write, "Dear Papa," and I would just literally say, like, you know, I remember when we were trying to sell our house, I would write my letters to God, and I would say, you know, because we had found the house that we loved, but we couldn't make an offer on it until our condo sold, and every day that our condo wasn't sold was like torture for me, you know. So I would write to God and be like, you know, God, good morning, like, the, you know, "Dear Papa, good morning, you know, thank you for today. I'm like really, really stressed out today. You know, I don't understand, like, those buyers came and they said they want more cabinet space, and I don't get it, like our condo is so good, like, why can't people give us a proper offer, you know?" And anyways, and then today I got to go to work and I'm really worried about this one presentation, you know, that kind of thing, just like chatting. And like, and I also just wanted to say, like, you know, thank you so much yesterday. Like, I really enjoyed like watching that episode with my husband, you know, it was really fun. And I really like that we did that, you know. And then I end off with like, "Yours, Crystal," you know? So I literally just like write a letter, and that's usually one side of the notebook page. And then I pause just for a moment and I just sort of internally go like, "God, please help me to hear your voice. Please just help me to hear what you want to say to me." I just like take a breath and say that. And then I put my pen on the other side of the page. And I used to write, you know, "My beloved daughter, Crystal." And today now it's changed. At some point it became "My little chickpea." That's what Papa calls me, is my little chickpea. Mm-hmm. So you'll usually write, you know, "My little chickpea." And then God just says stuff to me, like with this house thing, you know, God said to me, like, "I know how hard this is for you. I know how much you want that house. Everything that matters to you matters to me." You know, and he said to me, like, you know, "It's not a coincidence that you have to wait. Waiting is really, really hard." You know, but he said, you know, "You're going to always be waiting for something, Crystal. And if you don't know how to wait well and wait in peace, you're never going to get to be happy. So I need to give you these times to, like, where you have to wait for things that you want. Because otherwise, you, like, if you always got what you wanted when you wanted, you'd never learn how to be happy in the waiting. And waiting is really, really important in life, you know. So I'm here with you. I'm not going to leave you. I'll be with you during that presentation. You know, I'll be with you right from the beginning. Whatever happens, I'll be there, you know." And I love that episode, too. I was so happy that you guys watched it. You know, that's the kind of, like, so God gives me, like, the highbrow, you know, the, like, peaceful, wonderful talk. And then he tells me, like, the regular stuff. Like, I'll just say one more thing. Like, yesterday I was writing, you know, to God. I felt really, I sometimes get too zoned in on things. And I just, like, forget everything else. And I went to sleep really late. And because of that, I had to cancel an appointment. And I was very disappointed in myself. And I wrote to God and I was like, "I'm so disappointed. You must be so, like, you know, just disappointed in me. I don't know why I did that. I don't know why I don't learn from my lessons." And what God said to me was like, "I know you need to get more sleep, but, like, you know what? Like, you're not a disappointment to me. You're a delight. Like, you're like this little fireball. Like, you just, when you get going on something, like, nothing stops you." And he's like, "I love watching that. Like, I love, that's how I made you. You know, I love watching that. Yeah, you got to rein it in sometimes, but, like, I love watching it. Go do your stuff. You know, today, yeah, you had to cancel your appointment. Don't worry. The tire company will be fine. You just go take a nap, rest. I'll help you with the talk you got to prepare for tomorrow. We're going to be fine." You know, so God talks to me like that in my letter. And it's honestly, it has literally kept me sane every single day these last 3 years. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Denise. And our final question comes from Diana Y.
Hi. I'm Diana Y. I'm a sugar addict and compulsive overeater. Wow, this is exactly what I needed. Just all talk about God. I've been having some trouble for the last 3 weeks as far as my mood. And something I think is blocking me. I don't know what it is, really. And I've been asking God for help. And I, you know, I always come back to the fact that, you know, maybe I've gotten further away from God. And I pray every morning. I don't, and ask to get closer to God. And I just must be further away.
Sorry, I'm not sure if it's me, but I can't hear you, Diana.
Diana, can we ask you to pose a question, please? Star one to unmute, Diana.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, your question, please, in the interest of time.
Yeah, so sorry about that. What do you do when God is not giving you what you want? And I'm talking about for my son, and I'm talking about for like 15 years. That's my question.
Thank you, Diana. Thank you for that question. And I'm sorry for what you've been going through, both with your son and with your mood. Whenever I've had challenges like that, it's really hard and painful. What I can share when God's not giving me what I want, that's been a lot of it, like a lot of the last 3 years. I wanted, like today, I don't want to be tired. I want to have the energy. I want to be able to go do things, go shopping with my mother-in-law or things like that. Actually, I'll tell you the biggest one, kind of, similar, I guess, with your son, maybe, is with my husband. What I want is for my husband to be a successful voice actor. I want him to audition for things and get the auditions and then start having, like, money come in consistently every single month. That is what I want, and it has not happened for 3 years. And that's really, really hard. And I can only tell you what has worked for me. One is, it's okay to be sad about that. I can be sad, and sad feelings for me about the fact that that hasn't happened doesn't mean for me that I am away from God. It just means that I'm disappointed. I do my step work on it. I put it through the steps to see where am I being selfish, dishonest, etc. And then I ask God to show me what is my next right action. And usually it is, just simple. Just really simple actions. When it's something that's about somebody else, like somebody else is not doing something, I have come to learn that I have to kind of let people be. Like I have to come to learn that, which is really, really hard for me. That's a lot of power to put on another person for them to do something for me to be okay. And I had to go to God to say, God, help me to come to realize that I can be okay even if my husband is never a successful voice actor, that I can be okay anyways, and that somehow it will be for our highest good. I can't see how right now, but somehow it'll be for my highest good. I've also had to realize and come to realize that people are allowed to do the totally wrong thing. My husband is allowed to choose things for himself that are really bad. He's allowed to make really bad decisions. It is the privilege that he has for being a human being. And it's the privilege I have of being a human being. When God watches me do the wrong thing, like he doesn't correct me. Like he lets me learn and go through my own journey. So I've started to come to respect other people's journeys the same way God respects mine, and let them have their journey and realize, what do I need to do for me to be okay? Whatever that is, if it means we need to cut down our spending, we need to, save up some money or look for a part-time job. Like, what do I need to do to be okay for me without putting it on that other person? And that's not easy. I have to go to God and ask for the next right action on that. But those are some of the things that have really helped me. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Diana Y. Thanks to all who posed questions this morning. And of course, thank you so much, Crystal, for your compelling and thought-provoking presentation this morning. So very beautiful. Again, the share ID for today's presentation, 23,485. That's 23,485. And we're going to close now from page 164, found in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.